Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
I got an email this morning. Let me bring it up here. It says, the folks who run the planet have 364 days in their honor, more in leap years. The people whose labor makes it run have only one. So happy May Day. Well, that's the conception of May Day I've always had, the International Workers' Holiday. That's been what's called the Red May Day. There's also a Green May Day, which is much older. And I have often been annoyed, I will admit this, with liberal congregations doing the Green May Day and ignoring the Red May Day. You know, it's that nature thing. Green, the spring festival of fertility, an ancient festival with many ancestors in various European cultures. You know, the Flora Festival in ancient Rome and Germanic festivals whose names have been lost to memory, but later got attached to a Saint Walburgis after Christianity took over and found it impossible to get rid of the pagan customs. The Red May Day is more recent. Since 1887. The background to that was that a year earlier in Chicago, on May 1st, 1886, a general strike was called in demand of the 8-hour working day. 200,000 workers walked out. On May 4th, there was a rally in Haymarket Square in Chicago where a bomb was thrown, and to this day, it's still not clear who really threw it. But both police and civilians were killed. A number of the leaders of the strike were arrested, tried, and executed. By May 1st of 1887, workers' organizations around the world had agreed to mark that as a day in honor of the labor leaders who were killed and all workers. Now, I used to see these two holidays as being very different. They are, however, connected, as Peter Linebaugh demonstrates in this little book, The Incomplete, True, Authentic, and Wonderful History of May Day. Connects both the ancient holiday of fertility and green and the modern holiday of struggle for the rights of working people. As a holiday of labor, May Day is about the rights of those who provide the actual labor that makes things and does things and moves stuff around to get their fair share of the value they create. Now, we understand how that works with industrialism and production of things that are sold at a profit. But the issue goes much farther back, long before the industrial era, long before the birth of modern capitalism. It goes back to the era in Britain of the enclosures of the commons, where it used to be the case that anyone could graze their cattle on common lands or pick wood from common forests. But then, in the second millennium, the 1200s, the 1300s, even earlier, the lands began to be enclosed and turned into private property owned by various nobles and royalty. That was, in fact, the invention of private property as we know it today. And this led to an exploitation of both land and labor by the owners. People paying rents to farm on land that had once been common land. people paying taxes to royalty for the use of roads and common lands. This exploitation of land and labor was so extreme that the political economist and Unitarian, David Ricardo, judged that landlords who lived solely on rents were morally depraved in comparison to actual capitalists who took risks. Now, David Ricardo, for those of you who don't know, lived from 1772 to 1823. He was Jewish by birth and wanted to marry a Quaker woman. So he sort of became a Christian by becoming a Unitarian. This is a story that continues to this day. And he was one of the major intellectual influences on Karl Marx, living about a generation or two before. Well, in sum, the privatization of land and other means of production have historically been the means by which a disproportionate share of the value of land and labor goes not to the common person, be that a farmer, a craftsperson, a factory worker, a code writer, but to those who own the factory, the farm, the computers, the land. As a green holiday, May Day celebrates the rebirth of the earth following winter. Now remember, the climate has varied radically over the centuries, and Northern Europe was much colder 800-900 years ago than it is today. So things might not have sprouted to what's now May. And it existed way before Christianity came to Europe. And in spite of Britain's conversion to Christianity, for example, in spite of Christianity's eventual domination of Europe through the Middle Ages, May Day, with the maypole at the center of the celebration, more than survived Christianity, more than survived Catholicism, Protestantism, capitalism, and urbanization. It just wouldn't disappear. Now, this is getting more and more attractive all the time. Connecting the earth to primal struggles for survival and sustenance and creativity. May Day can be traced to the ancient festival of Floralia in Rome, which predated Christianity, and to ancient Germanic cultural festivals in Scandinavia and Germany and Northern Europe, whose names we've long forgotten. And it has, throughout the Christian era, been a popular holiday in Britain and Europe. Major celebrations in Britain in the 1500s and 1600s were even being held at churches, as well as in public squares. And associated with the holiday was the character of Robin Goodfellow, a man of the forest not unlike Robin Hood, who, if he actually lived, would have been about 700, 800 years earlier. So there's that connection again, because we know the story of Robin Hood, don't we? Coming out of the woods with his band of merry men, as it says, to rob from the rich and give to the poor, reversing what they viewed as the rich robbing the poor and accumulating wealth. Well, during the brief period of the Calvinist Commonwealth in England, when there was no king for a few years, May Day was outlawed. Christianity at large didn't do it, but the Calvinists went after May Day. The Calvinists hated May Day. Calvinists are all about work and guilt and fear of damnation. Why have a party in the spring to celebrate life? But it never disappeared. And the Puritans, as you know, Oliver Cromwell not only died, he died of natural causes, but they exhumed his body to execute him after the restoration of the crown. But the Puritans survived as a movement and went to Massachusetts. and not knowing it became the ancestors of American Unitarianism. And they hated maypoles in Massachusetts. There was an English settler named Thomas Morton who in 1627 went to Massachusetts and started a settlement called Merry Mount, that's M-E-R-R-Y, Mount, M-O-U-N-T, between the Massachusetts Bay Colony, centered in Boston, and the Plymouth Colony. It was in what's now the city of Quincy, Massachusetts. And in the Marymount settlement, which was, you know, a colony with the approval of the king, you know, go there, make money for the crown one way or another, just get out of here. He set up an 80-foot-high maypole. That's a heck of a tree he had to cut down to make that. And instead of trying to drive the Native Americans away, he set up trade and joint farming with them. And much to the fear of the Plymouth Colony to the south and the Mass Bay Colony to the north, he taught the Native people how to use guns. He was driven out of the colony twice and shipped back to England. I mean, it was so serious that William Bradford was sent up from Plymouth to capture him and put him on a ship, Governor Bradford. And they cut down and burned the maypole, and there was a large cedar tree that they used also as a place to gather. And that was eventually cut down, but a piece of it is still preserved in the museum in Quincy. What's that, 300, 500 years later, almost, 400 years later. You know, once you roll through a couple of centuries, they go fast. So you begin to see there is a kind of a connection here, isn't there? Peter Linebaugh in his book connects the two, the Green May Day and the Red May Day, and I'm going to quote him here. And listen carefully because he quotes it, he combines them in complicated ways where there's both positive and negatives on all sides. I quote, "Under the rainbow, our methodology must be colorful. Green is a relationship with the earth and what grows therefrom. Red is a relationship to other people and the blood spilled thereamong. Green designates life with only necessary labor. Red designates death with surplus labor. Green is natural appropriation. Red is social appropriation, expropriation, excuse me. Green is husbandry and nurturance. Red is proletarianism and prostitution. Green is useful activity. Red is useless toil. Green is creation of desire. Red is class struggle. May Day," he concludes, "is both." So May Day can be a celebration of both life and labor. Workers, of course, have a right to a fair wage, reasonable working hours, safe conditions, and benefits, to be sure, but also to a fulfilling life. And you heard that hymn, Bread and Roses. It wasn't just about wages. It was about having a life with meaning and joy. There was a song from the Knights of Labor who flared up briefly in the 1800s as a predecessor to organized labor. And all they sort of dribbled along for another half century. Their height was in the 1800s. And they had a song called the 8-Hour Song. Because the goal was an 8-hour working day. It goes like this. I'm not going to try to sing it. I don't know the tune. I just have the words. "We want to feel the sunshine. We want to smell the flowers. We're sure God has willed it. And we mean to have 8 hours. We're summoning our forces from shipyard, shop, and mill. 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will." Balanced life, sounds like, doesn't it? Now, one of the things I didn't mention about the Haymarket Affair, which gave birth to the Labor May Day, was that one of those executed was Albert Parsons. Albert Parsons had fought for the Confederacy during the Civil War. After the war, he traveled around and experienced different things. became not only an advocate for free white labor, but for free labor in general, and married a woman who was part African-American and part Native American. Quite a movement over 20 years from a Confederate soldier to a radical labor leader. Well, he was one of the people executed for that, but his widow, Lucy Parsons, for the rest of her life, worked for the rights of working people. She was friends with William Morris, the British designer and poet, who wrote a poem at her request, and there are two parts to it. One, the workers are speaking, and one, the earth is speaking. The earth and the workers are speaking to each other. The workers. They are few, we are many. And yet, O our mother, many years were wordless, and naught was our deed. But now the word flitteth from brother to brother. We have furrowed the acres and scattered the seed. The earth responds. Win on then unyielding through fair and foul weather. And pass not a day that your deed shall avail, and in hope every springtide come gather together, that unto the earth you may tell all your tale. So May Day becomes a celebration of the labor struggle through the year preceding, as well as a celebration of the abundance of the earth from which all people, whatever kind of work they do, ultimately draw their sustenance. Today, May Day is celebrated not just in Europe, but around the world as a workers' holiday. And with the call for Labor Day, it was supported by many leaders in various labor groups, including Samuel Gompers, who was far from being the radical that Albert and Lucy Parsons were. But he supported the celebration of May Day. Now, recently, Sweden has pushed the spring holiday from May Day back to April 30th, which had been known as St. Walpurgis Night, so that May Day could be solely Labor Day in Sweden. And that's true in some other countries as well. In the U.S., however, where May Day started, it fell victim to the anti-communism of the mid-20th century. The unions were attacked, branded as being communist infiltration. And during the Eisenhower era, there were proclamations that May 1st would be Law Day. And then Loyalty Day. And then the first Monday in September was established as a Labor Day at a different time, dissociated from the violent struggle of the early union organizing in the 1880s and 90s. Now, I was a child in the 1950s when all this was happening. That was also when they added Under God to the Pledge of Allegiance. The Methodist minister who wrote the Pledge of Allegiance did not have Under God in it. Well, but that's another story. I was a child in the 1950s, and I got all of this through the media. I could have had my worldview come to conform to that anti-communist mindset, and some of my peers did. However, I am willing to bet that not only because my parents were union members, though not particularly radical ones, and not just because we grew up in a working-class community, but because I avidly watched one of the best and earliest and most subversive TV series of all times, the British-produced Adventures of Robin Hood. Now, Robin Hood and his men were forest dwellers defending ordinary people from the effects of enclosure and taxation by crown and landlord, which are often one and the same, representing both the spirit of Green May Day and Red May Day, both. Now, some of you may not know this, but as part of that anti-communism in the United States in the 40s and 50s, many people in the entertainment industry were blacklisted and couldn't find work. Actors, writers, producers. The producer of the British TV series, The Adventures of Robin Hood, was an American woman who had worked in Hollywood who had been blacklisted and moved to England to work. The writers of most of the scripts for the first two seasons were writers who had been blacklisted in Hollywood, including Ring Lardner Jr. Their names never appeared in the credits. And I went back and watched the whole first season a couple of years ago. No wonder I turned into a leftist. But my brother who watched it didn't, so, you know, who knows. But it was not just TV. Like many baby boomers who are now middle class, I grew up in the working class. And those are the values I grew up with. Now today I am definitely a member of the middle class, and my job is not like those of my father, who through most of my childhood was a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Nor my mother, who before I was born was a member of the United Electrical Radio and Machine Workers of America, and later, after she was widowed with young children still at home, first a Teamster driving school buses, and then as a teacher's aide member of Connecticut Education Association. And since she had never graduated from high school, teacher's aide was as far as she could go. But they did find out when they got her high school transcript from Evander Childs in the Bronx that she had more credits than they required for graduation in Connecticut. So the local school board gave her a diploma decades after she dropped out of high school. Well, so I am definitely part of the middle class. And in an interesting discussion I had with a colleague of mine, he said he wanted to join the Industrial Workers of the World, but they wouldn't let him because as a minister he was management. And that provoked a very fruitful discussion. Well, unions were strong and powerful when I was growing up. You know, I grew up in not middle class, but in what the sociologist Richard Sennett calls the affluent working class. People with well-paying jobs, good benefits, protection through the union, so they had job security. In a book reviewed on the front of the New York Times Book Review this morning, Thomas Franks has written a book called Listen Liberal, or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People, about how the Democratic Party has gone from being a party primarily oriented toward working people to a party oriented primarily towards a professional managerial class, which is, you know, where I live now, you know. But what a difference that makes and what kinds of policies a particular party promotes and what kinds of candidates it chooses. And union membership is a fraction of it once was. In 2015, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 11.1% of the U.S. workforce. Down from 21.1% in 1983, and much higher numbers in the 50s, which the BLS seems not to be able to come up with. Today's workforce, the public workforce, is 35.2% unionized, the private workforce 6.7% unionized, and African Americans are more likely to be in a union than white workers. A unionized worker has an average weekly wage of $980, a median wage of $980, a non-union worker $776, which there comes that magic 79% number again that pops up in all sorts of things about job discrimination and differentials. And what is $980 a week? That's just under $51,000 a year. And wages have barely grown since the all-out assault on the unions began 35 or so years ago. There have been lots of attacks, but 30 years ago, Democrats as well as Republicans started doing things that undermined organized labor and the kinds of jobs that organized labor were in. Free trade acts that moved good-paying manufacturing jobs overseas, the weakening of labor protections, and so on. Wages have barely grown over the last 30 years when you account for inflation. Unions have shrunk and corporations have had free rein to ship good jobs overseas and underpay workers. The minimum wage when I started working in 1964 with, I believe, $1.25. Adjusted for inflation, that's still much more valuable than today's minimum wage by about $1.50 in current dollars. The push for a $15 minimum wage would actually produce a living that someone could survive on modestly, but still would not be affluent. So on this May Day, we can celebrate life and the earth, and that is good. And we can celebrate the people who do the hard and dirty work of the world, who are still often underpaid and insecure. And we can celebrate, as I do, those organizations that work on behalf of the people who do the hard and dirty work of the world, the unions, workers' associations, and other such groups. And we can push back against the proletarianization of even professions, where people like teachers who are educated and professional are more and more constrained in how they do their work, and other well-trained people who need graduate educations to do the job, but are now finding less and less of the satisfaction and compensation and authority that comes with entering a profession. So, the people who run most of the world have 364 days a year to be honored, and those who do the hard, dirty work get one. And that's today. Happy May Day, everyone.